Accession number 13717, Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Charles G. Reel 13.
Colonel G, Reel 13. Now, we were talking about your time with the 11th Battalion after the,
yes,
the Blitzkrieg had started. And we've looked up a couple of things because I wasn't familiar with the 11th Battalion, and we've checked a couple of things. The 11th Battalion's original positions that you mentioned on the canal were on the Canal du Nord.
Yes.
And the officer commanding the 11th Battalion was Colonel John Bramwell.
Yes.
Who you said you'd met in the First War.
Yes.
What did you think of him? We've talked about the adjutant.
That's ordinary. I didn't think a great deal of him.
Do you think he had a good impact on the battalion?
Fairly, moderately. The trouble was the battalion was split into three different places and there was nothing to get at.
So you joined him in the evening, I think, at Wancourt. Where
no,
he was
early morning.
Sorry, early morning.
Or night. And early morning.
And he had with him the stores.
The stores and one vehicle full of ammunition and grenades and things.
So who else was at Wancourt? They had the vehicle, the colonel.
And that's all.
And
some stores.
And none of the companies? Not even
No, none of them. I'd left them behind at Henin, I think, about one village away.
And which
told him about them.
Yes, you mentioned. How many companies were left at Henin? The whole battalion? Or
I think the battalion, what was left of the battalion was left there in a barn.
And where had the rest gone? They hadn't
well,
been
a few had gone up to join the BEF, and the rest had followed me all night. They got tired, and they'd having a rest. I told the girl where they were.
And then what happened then? Let's take up the story.
Well, the colonel and I looked round the village. The colonel was fuming because the adjutant of the transport had been away such a long time. They only had to go about two or three villages away. And they'd been hours and hours over it. And we walked round and there was a shop that had been looted. And we looked in it and there was nothing of any value left that I put in my pocket. A few rags that would act as handkerchiefs if I needed them, getting a bit short, or had a bit of a cold. And I put in my pocket two little bottles of liquid Bovril or something similar. And there was nothing else worth taking. May have been a couple of sweets, but there had been nothing in the way of food. And I think I was beginning to get empty.
Were there any other units in the village at all? Or was the
nobody in the village. All the villages were completely deserted, and the cows were lowing their heads off because nobody had milked them. Terrible business we'd seen so many Belgians leaking out of France, and then this is France, and nobody in it. And then the colonel got impatient and said, well, I think you'd better go and get in this vehicle and it's got its driver and go and get see what's happened with the adjutant and our five vehicles, we had five lorries. And that's all the transport we had on the car.
And that's why you'd wish you requisitioned more transport, earlier.
Yes. And so off I went. We got to the next village. We'd been dive bombed by enemy aircraft, making a frightful noise.
What do you remember of that? What was it like?
Appalling noise. I'd never heard anything like it in my life. It was quite frightening. The driver and I got out and hid in a courtyard with a wall or two between us and the vehicle and out of sight. Took what cover we could.
Did they actually bomb it?
Or no. They missed. They were just diving, making a tremendous frightening noise. And when that departed, we got out back into the road, and just as I was going to get in the vehicle, transport turned up, going back to Wancourt with the front car, the two drivers and the transport officer in the back. And so I thought, well, I'll get in with the transport officer and go back to the colonel. It's only a village away. Sent the driver on, knew the way. And afterwards learned that he'd been blown up a few hundred yards ahead by the enemy aircraft. And I went back towards the colonel. As we were swinging round a corner into Wancourt, we were almost had a head-on collision with Rommel's leading vehicle, which fired about five shots into our car. One, I know, went through the front headlight. To avoid a head-on collision, we couldn't stop. We whisked up a rough lane to the right, and the firing went on at the lorry behind us.
Was it a tank or a scout car?
Some sort of armoured low car, I think. Just saw some Germans in it. A mixture of partly armoured, but not a tank. And we turned up this lane, about 100 yards out of sight, and got out, looked at our car, it seemed all right, except that we got the bullet out of the left-hand headlight, unmarked. It had gone through the glass in the front, but not marked, and not gone through the reflector at the back. And we wondered what the hell had happened, and I thought, and said that we'd been told that the front had been all put back and is all right. Therefore, this must be some armoured division that had broken through and was loose behind our lines. And I thought they would have to move on and fight their way back. And anyway, we walked to the end of the lane, looked out over the fields, and saw swarms and swarms of tanks coming over the open ground, past where the where the rest of the battalion was left. And then we were in a lane that side of the village, Wancourt, looked to the hedge, and we heard a noise very near, tanks very near, so we got into a shelter, and there was a farm cart there, and we lay in the farm cart with sides looking out through cracks as about 10 tanks roared past us and presumably past our car.
So by now, did you realise that the brigadier had been wrong when he told you?
Well, something very odd had happened, but it was a puzzle. I then said, perhaps rather stupidly, with absolute peace and quiet on the summer's day, I'm going down to look to the square to see what's happened to the girl. And started to go and realised I couldn't. There were Germans all over the place. So I dipped into some shelter and then saw some steps and went down into a cellar. Double cellar, and also covered with the floor covered with First War webbing and Lewis gun ammunition holders and so on. And I noticed also the garden there was about 8 feet high in barbed wire taken over the wall. And sat there for a bit, and then was joined by the other three, an officer, the transport officer, and the two drivers. And we put some of this gear out to dry. It was all damp, very damp. And we wondered what was what. And we thought we'd perhaps somebody said we must escape at night. And we seemed safe there. And we kept going up the steps and standing in the sun to get warm, because it was cold and damp inside. When night came, I went up the steps and found the whole of the German, and found our car painted blue just above us, with a driver in it, a German driver in it, and all the German vehicles just above us, just a whole mess of them, all with drivers in.
And they painted your
car? They painted our car blue, and theirs were blue. I tried to get in the barn and woke up some people inside, were clearly about 80 Germans in it. And so I retired and thought that's enough for the night. Oh, there's a German sentry on a gate at the end of the lane leading out to the fields. And one at the other end, well, as I saw the daylight, so the lane and sentry at each end. And we waited another day, thinking, well, they're bound to move on. We discussed it. We had a fairly exciting time removing all possible traces of who we were. I had to tear up a cheque written by myself, to myself, for a few £100 owed by the owed for me for food I'd bought for the battalion and the canteen. And that was, I was duly paid back after the war for it, having an officer witnessed it. I had a German revolver from the First War revolver, a lovely 3.2. I got some ammunition with somebody for it, thought I'd better load it, tried to load it, and the ammunition didn't fit. It was French ammunition. And I'd got to get rid of the thing. Didn't want to be caught, if we weren't going to be caught, with a German revolver on me. So I hid it in the wall, and my daughter went to look for it. 30 years later, I couldn't find it. All our documents were concealed. We realized that if we were caught, we wouldn't have to give away any information of any value. And I went to sleep. Well, the second night, we got out. The vehicles had all gone and had parked somewhere else. And I wandered about a bit. The sentry wasn't on the gate. So I walked the gate, almost through it. The sentry was half asleep, leaned against a wall. And then I realized he'd woken up and was following me. And I remembered, the great thing is to get a good background. So I got in a good background. And he hadn't seen me. And I tried the barn again. Same horrible German noises came out of it. So I went back into our cellar and went to sleep. The next thing I knew was woken with a bullet hitting the wall nearby, right here, and the great shout of "Aus," A-U-S, meaning out, and I got out, but somebody got out before me, one of the men, the other one of the drivers. Then I was second out. We were searched to have him for any arms on us. And I saw the one that got out while I was being frisked for anything. I saw him standing against a wall with a bloke aiming a rifle at him. And I thought, I was terribly sleepy and packed. What good Lord, they're going to shoot us, are they? And then I curiously thought, I wonder if the people going to the guillotine in France were as carefree as I am. Actually, wasn't frightened, just half asleep. And I just stood there, got the rifle pointed at me, and watched the officer, the transport officer, being searched, and asked if there were any more, and he said, no, there aren't. Thought, well, he'll cop it because there is one more. There were four of us. And I discovered afterwards one had been picked up by the Germans earlier while I was asleep. And they decided not to shoot us. I don't know why, yet we discussed it a bit and thought perhaps because Well, they took us away to some German officers. They were asked us what we knew of the defences of Arras, which was just very near. Well, we knew nothing and couldn't have told them anything. And we thought it might have been, but I was wearing First War ribbons, and therefore I might know something about it.
Did they just ask, or did they interrogate you?
Well, they did ask. They didn't go on. It wasn't a proper interrogation. And then we were led off to the church, which was half full of prisoners.
One core church?
Yes, with a huge unexploded bomb in it, an enormous one. And people were huddled well away from it. Well, there wasn't any room where they were huddled, so we joined the bomb, more or less, sat very near it. They then fairly quickly gave us postcards to write home, which surprised me. And we duly wrote them. And I suppose I said I was a prisoner and wanted a parcel sent to me. As I went out to the loo somewhere later in the day, there were the men shooting bullets into the ground around me all the time. It took me across the road to a churchyard or something, and I squatted down, and you fired bullets into the ground, so you could fire at me if I tried to escape. The porch of the church was covered with our postcards. They just looked through them to see if there was anything to help them and throw them away. And we got no food. They may have given us a slight
pick. Were the postcards actually sent then, or not?
No, they were not sent. Just like
it was just purely an intelligence ploy.
Yes. And
the food, you were saying?
The next day, I think it was, we marched away a bit and got into...
You were saying about food before?
No food.
No food.
No drink, I don't think.
What exactly did you have with you, you know, when you were taken
there? When I was in the... in the cellar with three others, they had nothing with them. They'd had breakfast, I think. I had a water bottle, about a third full, which we shared for 2.5 days. And I had these two bottles of useless Bovril, which we tried to drink, but it made us more thirsty. And I had a minute amount of chocolate, which we shared. I think I had three cigarettes. Otherwise, they had nothing at all.
And what kit were you carrying? Any at all?
I wasn't carrying... I don't know what I was carrying. I must have lost a hat there, I think.
So you just
I think while I'm marching at night, I must have had a coat with me, I think. But then
so
I had nothing.
Your coat and your uniform?
Yes.
No pack of any sort?
No.
Or valise?
No.
Or
if I had, it got left in there. I hadn't won them the next day, anyway.
So when did you left the church, one called church?
Left the church, and walked to some lorries. They had some very big lorries with pulling very big lorries without wheels, tenders all behind them. Going back, presumably, to get more stores for the forward people. We were taken to a railway station, and shot on a train, a lot of train for days.
What were conditions like in the journey?
Well, somewhere they gave us some soup. Somewhere, when we were in a lorry, before we got on the train, stopped somewhere, some Belgians produced a few eggs, but I didn't like eating raw eggs then. I might go later, other days, but...
Now, you hadn't been segregated at all as an officer. You were still with...
No, just...
Was the train crowded? What sort of carriage were you in, or was it just a wagon?
Just a wagon of some sort. No, it was seats in it. And somewhere on the way, there was another officer, so I was with officers, I think. And we went I think, to Leipzig. Quite a long way into Germany, where I'd been before the war. And I remember being in a big hut with a bundle of French. There were about 20 English and about 15 French. And then we did get some food there. I'd been 3 or 4 days without, or more or less without. But we had an awful row with the French. We divided it very carefully. The French were cursing us all the time. I don't know why, letting France down or something. Quarrelled about the rations. I tried to be friendly with some of the French later, because we were there 2 or 3 days. All the NCOs were wearing masses of medals, and asked what they were. They were all for PT or something. None of them had seen any service anywhere. But they were definitely offensive.
Now, when had you had the trouble with this corpse being found, the mutilated corpse?
Oh, well, later on. That was sometime later. Yeah.
Sometime, okay. Well, so what was your accommodation? If you were in Leipzig for 2 or 3 days, what was your accommodation?
Some Dissen hut.
Was it an actual prison camp, or was it just a...
No, just a temporary thing. I suppose there were guards on. Then we...
So you were just in the hut with nothing to do particularly?
Nothing to do particularly. But we did get something to eat. And I suppose water to drink. And then we trained again and went back to where I spent most of the war, Spangenberg.
How do you spell that? Do you know?
S-P-A-N-G. S-P-A-N-G-E-N-B-U-R-G, Spangenberg. Off Lag 9-A-H.
Off Lag 9-A-H?
9-A-H.
9.
A.
A.
And there was a lower camp and an upper camp. British Hill with a really old castle on it. And we, a few of us, were bundled in the lower camp. And quite reasonable Germans said that we'd be there for a day or two, and then we'd go to the top camp, where there were British parcels and masses of cigarettes and everything fine.
So about what date would it be that you got there? You'd been taken prisoner in...
On the 20th of May, or 21st. So we'd be there about the 24th or 25th of May, something like that. And there were some officers. I can't remember.
It was an officer's camp, was it?
Yes, officer's camp with a few orderlies.
And what could you describe the layout of the camp, roughly?
Well, that was just on the main street of the village, a very small village, probably without a shop, with people peering through the wire at us. I mean, it felt like tigers in the zoo, I think.
Was there much wire? I mean, how?
I don't know. I suppose the area was 200 or 300 yards square. 2 or 3 big buildings that belonged to the castle. There's things like the stables and stores and so on, and cellars in which they kept dead fish hanging in the lake. So, because we saw them getting fish out for us week by week. And there were bunks to sleep in, and it was more or less
all
right.
Were you in Nissen huts there, or were you in
these buildings.
In the old castle
building.
And what type of bunks?
The lower camp.
The Lowick.
As it comes in again, when we started off with a few more came in day by day, until we were about 30, I should think. And we went up to the top camp one day, and we thought we were going to be mixed up with cigarettes and parcels and things. The Germans said it's fine, but no. Couldn't see anybody there when we got there. They'd all hidden or were in their rooms. They had decided, as we soon found, to have nothing to do with us. They had a number of British parcels and plenty of food and plenty of cigarettes. And I heard there was rather that it was somebody thought it was too big a party to share with. And I.
They were British prisoners already
yes,
there?
Yes, British prisoners.
And they wouldn't share?
They wouldn't share. And we had an awful row about each other. We had a friend of mine. Oh, I'd been the senior British officer, as I thought, below, and we still go around and inspect them. And after a bit, this man, Clout, very important, came to me and said, well, actually, he knew German. He was the same rank as I was, and he was fighting in the Second War, fought in the First. And it's in the Second War to avoid his children being in it. Now, he liked the First War, as I had. And he said, really, a person called Fennelly is your senior, and he is a senior officer because he's a regular. And so he is going to take command.
Had you actually done anything as senior British officer during your short period?
Yes, I'd walked around the camp and I would see the old camp here and know who was here, look, and so on.
There'd been about 30 men in the lower camp, and then you all moved up into the upper camp. And how many were there in the upper before you arrived, roughly?
Roughly 50 or 60.
So that made about 80, 90, 100 yes. British officers together. And what was the layout of the top camp? Was it the same as the bottom one, castle buildings and wire? Or
it was a very old castle.
It actually was the castle?
Yes, it was the castle. And it had a big dining room and kitchen and a courtyard 28 yards long. And a way out at the end, it was a rather triangular courtyard. That you could walk around. A moat, a dry moat, 45 feet wide, 45 feet deep. Dry moat. Extraordinary thing. And the sentries outside, on the outer side of the moat, apart from a few in the camp by day.
And the usual castle walls.
Yes.
It was a medieval castle, was it?
Yeah, it's really a medieval castle. It had recently been the centre of forestry in that part of Germany, as we did some forestry later.
Did the castle have a name, or was it just known as the Spangenberg?
Spangenberg Castle.
And the village was Spangenberg?
Yes. The village was fairly big, not the bit we'd been in, but there was a fair amount the other side of the castle.
Of the village?
As I remember, yeah.
Now, you settled in, and the officers were. What was the morale amongst the officers when you first got there? Both the original the group.
Low, we were all hungry and wanting cigarettes and plenty miserable because couldn't see any end to the war. It was an appalling thought. We got German news laid at us repeatedly, and after a bit we got German printed English papers, I think especially for prisoners. But it gave football news and was useful in the lavatory. And, it was a pity that it stopped.
Do you know what it was called?
No, I can't remember.
And this was in English with English sports results?
Well, there was a fair amount of football. Well, there wouldn't be much in May and June, but it was a little later it came. But it was very useful. I mean, you did get something to read and something to blow your nose on and wipe yourself on. And some colonel said it was designed to make us become Germans or something. That's rubbish.
And it had news, because the war was going very well for Germany,
yes.
Obviously.
Oh, yes, they thought they were winning.
And you saw no end to the war in the sense that you knew once you'd been kicked out of France it would take a while, I presume.
Yes. I couldn't see how it stopped. Entering the top camp, not being allowed to share, was terrible because nearly all of us from the lower camp were very hungry. A lot of us had had days without food. And the German rations are pretty shattering because they've nearly all potato.